fine? Are we good?
Hello, hello, hello.
Probably not.
Hello, hello.
Let's go.
Are we doing like a little intro first? Or no, that's going to be later. That's post. We're going to do that later.
Yeah, we'll do that later.
Sean, just shut up. Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Welcome to Seeking What They Sought, where we're just getting into this on the tail end of just a bunch of nonsense. We are here with Matthew Lucio.
Okay, I want to introduce him, Jesse. Forget you. No, I'm introducing him. I came up with this.
Yes,
I came up with this.
Do it.
Okay. So we have the Reverend Matthew Lucio, Esquire, okay. Mm-hmm. MD, DO, mm-hmm. MDiv, PhD, DPM, DA, and also podcast creator.
Wait, what's Esquire? Like Esquire magazine?
No, like a lawyer. Like, I'm a lawyer.
Anthony, the fact that that's where your mind goes first is deeply concerning.
He's got the ring light, guys.
I'm an influencer. This is the world I live in.
Yeah.
So, Matthew, thanks for being on the podcast with us, considering your incredible resume that we've just found out about. But we've had you on before to talk about Adventist history a bit. We wanted to have you on again to talk about Adventist media. Adventist media is one of those things that, I think I definitely grew up with at least some semblance of watching like 3ABN or Hope Channel. I remember like my mom and dad got like the box that you had, like it was like the box that then would give you access to like the satellite or whatever. I don't remember exactly what the connection was. For those channels, and then we'd watch it. I do remember as a kid, not ever being impressed with what I was seeing.
As a 7 year old.
Honestly, this is kind of mid.
From a technical
standpoint. it was just always like, I mean, it's usually a white guy with a background that is just obviously a studio green screen or something like that. Or it's like they try to make it look like a living room, but it looks like your grandma's living room.
Sort of thing.
Well, that's who's watching. Like,
well, yeah, no, I get, I shall, yeah. Eric, I get that.
Contextualization.
Like, I'm just saying, like, that's what it always looks like. And then I remember they would have the, there was like the kid show that they would have on 3ABN. And the lady that would host that, she seemed really nice.
Uh-huh.
But she had a smile on her face so constantly that it's scary.
Yeah.
Like the smile never stops and you're like, that doesn't feel normal. Something feels wrong about that.
You haven't heard the children's song Happy All the Time?
That's
Adventism fully realized.
That's like the weird dystopian, like you're in the It's a Small World ride, stuck there for life, right. You know.
Right. That's what children's ministry does to you after a while. It's like the Joker. Like, you just can't unsmile.
You just get stuck.
You're stuck there.
Yeah.
That's a good horror premise.
But that was my
cradle roll.
Cradle roll. Oh, man. The clown from It is probably in that.
But that was sort
of watch movies. Sorry.
That was sort of the beginning of my my experience with Adventist media. I don't know about you guys, but I know that Adventist media has been a big part of the Adventist movement really since kind of it began. I mean, it sort of depends what we're talking about. Sean wanted to include like newspaper and stuff in there, and he tells me that it includes media. That's not what I think of when I think of media. But,
Jesse and Sean had
a
whole debate about this. This was a whole conversation.
Yeah,
it's not a debate.
I'm
He's objectively wrong.
Obviously, I'm right.
Like,
I'm right.
It's verifiable fact.
It is
that
literally
newspaper
called print media.
Yeah,
but that's called
also,
print
it's
media.
It's not real media.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, then define media. Like, what is the
multimedia?
Like, define.
That's what we're thinking about.
Sean, nobody cares about your opinion. what we're talking about is generally, if we want to talk about print, that's fine. But I know we started out with a lot of like literature that would be sent out, like that was printed, and then as radio came into being. We start off in radio and then into video, TV sort of things. But
sure.
I don't know. I'm curious, like, what's your knowledge base here, Matthew?
That's a great, very helpful question. like, what do you know about everything in the
Tell
universe?
Us.
I don't know a lot, but I will say print is absolutely part of the story, I think.
Matthew,
it's got to be.
Matthew, can we just cut? Well, we're going to cut Sean out of this for a second.
Okay.
We're just going to take Sean off video, and then you can say that, and then we'll bring him back.
Okay, fine, fair enough. But it's very much part. It's not just the newspapers. It's the illustrations that end up appearing in there. It's the famous prophecy charts that came from the Millerites. Like, you know, how do we distill all of this logical. This symbol connects to this symbol. Like, you got to illustrate that somehow to help people understand. So they have to make these prophecy charts. There's actually a fairly funny story to me. It's funny to me. In the 1860s, when Emmy Cornell was going through upstate New York preaching. But as you can imagine, when you're going to meet other Adventists and preach in a town you've never been to, you don't know what they look like. There's no way to text them and be like, hey, I'm getting off the train. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to find each other in this train station. And the local Adventist guy only found Cornell because he recognized the prophecy charts that he was carrying.
Wow.
That's how you could find an Adventist. That.
Calling
yeah.
card.
Yeah. Right? Just wave those beasts around, man.
That's great.
So, you know, I mean, that's part of it, right? You carried your illustrations with you. It's like carrying your PowerPoint with you, or your Canva slides or Google slides or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it's a way to kind of be visually identified. So, yeah, it's definitely part of media.
But I mean, so it starts from there. And I know Adventist media, if we're talking multimedia, it kind of started off in like radio as a movement towards reaching the world. If I'm correct, is that kind of the starting point?
I mean, if you want to start there, yeah, it's the best place to start.
What? I mean, where would you start?
Yeah, that's true.
I would start with print, but I mean, that's kind of like the same story for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Like the quality gets better, da 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 da. But I mean, when we get into radio and then when we get into visual forms, it's kind of like a weird transition because you're basically trying to take the old way you interacted with technology. So you may have like preached a series and then pointed to a picture or the prophecy chart or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, now you have to do that without anybody seeing what you're doing. So you have to find new ways of explaining what it is that you're talking about. Mm. And then when we went to TV, like who went to TV? It was a radio guy who first went into TV, right? So it's kind of like you have that transition between technologies to go from – we went from visual to audio and then from audio back to visual with TV, and we've been stuck there ever since. But, you know, there's a – I don't know. I think that's just all part of the journey is you can show people something, then suddenly you can't. Then you can show them something again on a different format. And so the medium, I think, alters the message as we make these transitions from one medium to another.
That's a significant sentence.
I can't take credit for that. That's Marshall McLuhan who said that.
Anthony, why is it significant? You just stop baiting us with
I haven't figured out why, but the media alters the message is a significant phrase.
So I mean, Matthew, like the I know it that we have some of the more prominent media I don't even know if you title them like organizations or arms of the church or some of them are independent as well, but yeah, like It Is Written or Voice of Prophecy or what is it? Faith for Today. I know that's one. There's a few others that are fairly prominent. What is the relationship? Like how many of those are independent? How many of those are like, what are some of the major arms of the church?
That's a good question. It's kind of they've tried to clarify the relationships between these. So you have a few main categories. So you have church-owned ministries, obviously. That would be like Hope Channel. Then you have independent ministries, which is like Amazing Facts. And then you have supporting ministries, which is kind of a new-ish category where you have to agree to the 28 fundamental beliefs. You have to agree not to accept tithe. That was always a big sticking point with the church. And
thanks, Sean. Sean's recording this at school on spring break.
That's his spring break.
And he still has the bell.
His hot pockets are done.
And if you're a supporting ministry, you get to be a member of ASI. So that means you have access to donors, right?
ASI is...
Yeah. Adventist Layman Services and Industries. It's kind of like professional Adventist business owners getting together. So, yeah, you could be independent. You could be church-owned. You could be supporting. Then you have a few that are in the gray area, like It Is Written, because they're semi-independent or semi – I don't know what you want to call it. Like they get up at NED year-end meeting and they give reports about what they did, but they're not wholly operated by the church. Mm. There's something in between like them. Faith for Today and Jesus 101, those kind of ministries.
Now, to be honest, some of these I'd never really heard almost anything about. Like I knew about 3ABN, Hope Channel, like the Spanish versions of those.
Yeah.
And then, but like Faith for Today, never knew about it until I found out that there was someone who was like the CEO of it down here where I'm working, and or not the CEO, or I don't know, face of it, whatever. Or Jesus 101. I think I just recently heard about that. Like what is the target audience of a lot of these ministries?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I suppose that they could probably give you an answer, and then they would sometimes be wrong because I don't watch any of them.
It's like, sure. I feel left out of the target demographic.
Yeah, all of them. All of the target demographics.
and this is what brings, like, kind of what fascinates me is, you know, you look at today, and we can talk about today a bit, like where these ministries are now. But I guess when I look at it, when we talk about radio and even TV with It Is Written, when they first started, like they were, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but they were kind of groundbreaking, or I don't want to use the word cutting edge, but they were, it seemed like either with the times or ahead of the times when it came to using the technology of their day.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of fascinating to think about that. And I don't know, Matthew, if there's a reason, was there a motivation behind, you know, beyond just obviously evangelism, like being on top of those things, like how are we so quick to get on those things as a church versus other evangelical movements or.
Yeah. I think Adventists are a pretty pragmatic group of people. I mean, you know, we talk about veganism and the virtues of veganism, but like, let's be honest, 20% of the world church is vegetarian. Not just vegan, vegetarian.
Is it only 20%?
It's only 20%.
That's lower than I expected.
Guys, we're all hiding. Well, Sean is vegetarian, but like, I mean, we're all hiding in shame. Let's bring this into the open.
It's a rebellion. Sean, we got to hold down the fort. Okay. Well, my point is like, there's an idealism to Adventism, but like really at our core, we're a pretty pragmatic people. And we look at something, we're like, can I use this tool? Yes or no? Let's find a way to use it. So that doesn't usually lead us to being on the cutting edge. Like when HMS Richards started Voice of Prophecy on the radio, it was 1929. That was about 8 years after the first religious broadcast. But that's not super slow because you've got, you know, like the Vatican didn't get on radio until 31. So were we at the front? No, we were like in the middle.
That's huge that the Vatican didn't get on radio until 31, because if they had, we wouldn't have gotten on it. Well, we've been like, that's the Antichrist.
Some would argue that the Vatican did get on the radio through Voice of Prophecy.
We had to beat them, though. At least we beat them by a couple years.
We beat them by a couple years. Woo, Adventists are better.
Amen. Praise the Lord.
I mean, the Episcopalians were the first, so what does that say?
Dang it.
Yeah. Don't even know what you guys believe. Can't even spell your church's name. Right. Says the Seventh-day Adventist.
I know. Right. Literally.
Well, so then like with TV, were we on the cutting edge of that, or were we sort of behind the signs of the times on that one?
No, I mean, I think, yeah, nice. We were definitely near the front. We were near the front. And actually the GC was leading that, because they're the ones who are like, we should try this. And they purchased the airtime and then said, now we need a program and a host and everything to use it. So, yeah, but it was a local thing. It was just like a local ABC station in New York City. Just a local station in New York City, you know.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, you know, that was some innovation on the GC's part. They moved pretty quick in pushing in that. And honestly, like a lot of church members didn't like Faith for Today because it was less preachy and they had some drama and stuff. Like, Faith for Today reminds me a little bit of Saturday Night Live, except it was not funny.
That sounds like Saturday Night Live.
All right, that's fair. Like that's totally fair. But I mean, like they would write their scripts throughout the week, and they'd figure out like, oh, we need some extras, or we need some other people to play these roles. So they would like be looking for young people, old people, whoever they needed for these roles, and then they would do it live in the beginning. They would do it live on camera, like on the day that it was happening, and it would be really tough. But so yeah, like they were writing the scripts and what we're going to talk about and who we need and rehearsal, rehearsal, rehearsal. They would say at one point that for every minute of broadcast, they rehearsed it for an hour. So it was a brutal week.
That's like some sermon prep numbers right there, where like, I think, what was it? Someone's like, for every minute of your sermon, you need to spend like an hour in prayer.
That was
I was like,
our
that is
preaching
not
professor.
That is ridiculous. Yeah.
It's always a professor that will say that.
Oh yeah,
always
hasn't preached in years.
Yeah, like the one who preaches like at convocation once, vespers once, mm-hmm. in the church once. No.
So, but that's interesting. I didn't know Faith for Today was like started in that, like that was the context for it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there were some church members at Annual Council that wanted to stop funding it after a couple of years because they're like, we don't like drama and how we're teaching. We need more preaching. Where's the preaching at?
Well, Jesus didn't use the television, so why should we?
Amen, brother.
That's right. That's right.
So, Matthew, maybe you can delve more into that. Why? Because it seems like in the Adventist church, we're happy to go on camera and preach a sermon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's about it.
That's true. Or do an interview with somebody.
Talk about like the resistance to anything that's more narrative or even documentary, like something that's outside the studio.
Mm. Right. Well, okay. So first of all, I think we got to keep in mind that, especially with TV, it's hugely expensive. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to ask the church to pay for TV time on ABC, which is what they did with Faith for Today. And then be like, what do you guys want to do? I don't know. Like, let's do something totally like concept. In film school, I had this idea that I really, no. It's the expectation is that it's going to be pretty safe because it's expensive. You don't get many shots because in radio and TV, you want other stations to pick you up your programming. So you got to appeal to as many people as possible. And back then, preaching was a good way to do that. Today it's different because tech is cheap, and anyone with a phone, Anthony with a phone, can be an influencer, and so you can do whatever you want. You can whatever kind of content you want to do. It's relatively inexpensive today, so I think we have the freedom to experiment more. Maybe they would have if they had cell phones back then in the 1950s. Like, would they have done different kinds of programs? Maybe.
Well, then why did we get stuck? So when did we start TV?
1950.
How did we get stuck in 1955 so quick?
It's not wrong.
No, I mean, to the degree, I guess it's that interesting thing with Adventism in general. Most of the churches that you'll walk into they still look like, they're out of the 70s or the 80s. Yeah. I'm not even so much condemning it as much as just saying, like, it's an interesting
phenomenon
part of being Adventist, culturally. Like, if I'm going to go visit my mom or visit somebody in a place that I'm not generally pastoring in, it's like, oh wow, I'm being transported back in time a bit.
Yes.
And when you watch Adventist media, there's a bit of that too. Like, even at like, you watch, like, I was watching Voice of Prophecy stuff because they were doing a big meeting push in the place that I was at when I first started pastoring my own church. And so I had to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how I said that.
You had to be a part of it.
Right.
And it was just interesting because the media that they use, like, it's still behind. Like, it's maybe the 90s or early 2000s. It's not, cutting edge stuff. Like, what are your thoughts on like why that is?
This is a complicated answer because it really depends on who it is. We got to keep in mind that our donor classes in the church are typically our boomers.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're making content for the people who are paying the bills largely. I think a lot of these people, I can't say anything on the record, but I know off the record, some of these speaker directors of these media ministries really want to produce different content.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
But they can't. I think probably of those big legacy media companies, I think Voice of Prophecy is probably the most innovative of them. Like, they're trying to stretch the most. I think Boonstra's graphics with his, I mean, the evangelism is still Adventist evangelism, right? But the graphics are like getting better and better with him. And he's got a show where he's trying to interact with like Jean-Paul Sartre, something he wrote, or more than just like a throwaway line. Boonstra has he's a pretty good, I don't know. He's a good mind. He's a good student. Intellectual student, but that's not everything. Like, okay, at Called, which I don't know, you guys were all at last summer. Maybe?
No, I don't think any of us were at it.
Okay, well, you suck. But
almost.
Yep.
That was So at the Cald convention, they were seriously trying to figure out how to get a hologram on the stage.
Oh wow!
But why? That in and of itself feels like the weird whiplash that Adventism goes through. It's like we haven't been relevant since the 90s. Let's go to the future.
Yeah, Ellen and James.
With real AI.
It's a deep fake AI.
Yeah.
It's real AI, ChatGPT, Ellen. Yep.
That's right. That's what it is. Dude, have you heard? Okay, this is a little plug to something I do since you guys didn't plug anything that I do.
We're going to do it at the end. I was going to do Matthew, I'm ready at the end.
It's cool. I'm totally messing with you.
I don't care.
I'm just messing with you. I'm just saying that an Adventist pilgrimage, which I don't host, I just produce it, but Greg Howell did an episode with a AI, Ellen White, and he asked her questions. She was like totally fundamentalist. I don't know what's going on. So I don't really know if the AI is really more progressive, because she was very legalistic in the answers that she gave to the questions. Like, so I don't know what to make of that, but any people who are watching or listening can go check that out. But anyways,
that's really...
I do think like hologram is a gimmick. Okay, let's all be honest about that. It's a cool gimmick. Like, I'd like to go check it out, but you know, I don't think Adventists are really that backwards. I think that the big media companies that we most often associate with Adventists in technology, like It Is Written, Amazing Facts, and so on, like they're doing what they need to do for their audience, and they're not like, the design is often dated. I agree with you. But the production values are not.
Well, but here's what's interesting is, like, you could talk production value. I mean, Eric, you might have a lot more to say on this, but like, you could talk production value and you could say that, like, it's a well-run TV show, but still it's like, you could say that about a lot of stuff, but that doesn't mean it's good. You know, like I get what you're saying about like reaching a specific audience, but even then it's like questioning who that audience is I think a worthwhile thing. And like, we're putting all this effort into something for what return? And I think back to that Voice of Prophecy seminar thing that we were part of. And I mean, granted, my parents came into the church through like a prophecy seminar, so I'm not like
like for what return? What's point of doing this stuff?
Me just being an Adventist.
Yeah,
me being an Adventist.
No, but I think it's more so like a thing in the last 15 to 20 years that like, well, what is the actual return on this investment? Because that Voice of Prophecy seminar that we did, it was just such an interesting experience, because the people that it attracted were exactly the type of people that I expected it to attract.
Yeah.
And those people, we had, I think, 4 baptisms out of that. It was really like, we had a couple of people that stayed in the church as a result of that, like at the church I was at. And that was really cool. And I really loved them. There was just so many people who they were the ones who were going to be attracted by the prophecy style and all that stuff. And then the return on that is not high. I mean, it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of stuff put into this stuff, and it's not a high return anymore. And so it's sort of an interesting.
West, I mean, I'd be curious to see worldwide the impact of, you know, Amazing Facts and It Is Written, Voice. Like, I don't know, like, cause you know, obviously we're still one of the fastest growing churches. You know, I haven't looked at the last year or two, but I know that we have been for a while. And so, you know, that actually goes back to, you know, the fact that, you know, when we started radio, when we started TV, that it almost seems like those things were pretty impactful. You know, It Is Written was the first in-color religious program. And then you get to where we exploded, what decade? The 60s, where you look at like the graph of Adventist worldwide membership, and it's like the 60s, 70s, you start seeing it skyrocket. I don't know how much of that would actually correlate with our media or if it's just our evangelistic practices. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that curve going up is the result of the investment in missions in the first 30 years of the 20th century. Like, we started seeing the dividends of that.
Okay.
Because that exponential growth, like even with, you know, our TV ministries grew fast, but like not that fast. I mean, even with radio, even with Voice of Prophecy, they went live in 1929, but they didn't get coast to coast until 1942. So it took, you know, 13 years or so. And television didn't take as long, but it takes some time to kind of build up a whole nationwide coverage. I'm sure it did help. Like, obviously, Voice Prophecy got a ton of Bible study requests. But, you know, I feel like, though, we have a sliding scale because we're like, well, what are the results of these media ministries? Like, what, you got four mm-hmm. baptisms in one church, and I get it. But then we're like, well, what are we going to do? Like, YouTube and TikTok and so forth. Like, mm-hmm. what are the results of that?
Hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, the investment and money and time into those things is so much smaller.
Yeah.
And the goal of that is different, too. It's just that, like, you know, it is written and all that stuff. They'll get talked up as, like, these, like, you know, this amazing ministry that's happening. And I'm not saying that it's not a meaningful thing. It's just sort of like, there's a lot of money going into that stuff. And, you know, is it still viable? I think is a valid question to be asking. But then again, like, I mean, they might have stats and stuff that you know, conflict with what I'm saying. But, yeah.
Of course they're going to have stats saying we're doing a great job.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, whether it's ultimately meaningful in the landscape of Adventism is a different story, I guess. That's debatable. But, I mean, obviously, you know, they're doing something that still causes people to donate to that ministry because they find it worthwhile.
Yeah. Mm.
Right? I mean, now, if you want to start a GoFundMe and say, let's defund Ministry X and fund me instead, you know, maybe, mm-hmm. like, the donors are a finite resource, so... I think that donors tend to, whether or not they like the show or like the ministry, they just tend to go with what they see happening.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
That prompts a question, Matt. Do you think, I don't even know how to word this, but something you said earlier prompted this for me, where you were mm-hmm. like, for the donors, like, the donors are mostly boomer age. And so because of that, the audience becomes boomer age. To me, that doesn't feel mm-hmm. like an obvious, I mean, it is in real life, like, the way reality works. But to me, like, that takes intention. Like, there's plenty of, right, there's plenty of ministries and media, even, like, in the non-Christian sphere, right? There's plenty of spaces where, like, the donor class is different than their target audience.
Sure.
How is it that just happens so easily for us? Because it seems, that's been my experience with a lot of Adventist media, is, like, it seems as if there's this assumed target audience, and the assumed target audience is, like, those who are doing it. And it seems like it's rare to see something that's done by a generation for a younger generation or for et cetera.
Yeah. I think that's precisely the problem, is we tend to be comfortable with the stuff that appeals to us. And so even, like, I look at, like, Gen Z, and I'm like, mm-hmm. You know, do more stuff for millennials, man. Like,
right.
You're like, explain the gospel in 12.2 seconds. Like, stop it, man.
I'm too old for
that. You need at least a minute and a half. know, like God intended.
So. I know. I feel like by Gen Alpha, it's going to be like, you're going to have like 2-second videos. Right. And then it'll rebound. And then whatever comes after Gen Alpha will just be, they'll just be hour and a half.
An hour and a half.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
We're just going to go back to preaching. 3ABN will be in again.
Which is
whatever is alpha.
That's
after
right.
Alpha.
That's right. You know, but like these ministries definitely see this. I know Hope Channel is really trying to work with to try to connect to younger people too. Like they see it. It's not like they're ignorant of it. Mm-hmm. They want to do it. But you know, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and I don't want to go like critique all of these ministries
for
or
sure,
whatever.
For sure.
I empathize with the challenge.
Well, I don't remember which one it is. It's either Hope Channel or 3ABN. This guy comes out. It's like, I think it's the youngest guy they could find, but he's at least in his late 30s, early 40s. And he preaches a sermon that he titles Euthanasia. That's all about
how
to reach the youth. And the graphics, it's got like green lights in the background. It's like everything stereotypical about like this is what the youth want. And I'm like, this hurts. This hurts to watch.
Yeah.
Wait, was it how to reach all the youth in Asia?
Yeah,
no,
that's what I was gonna say.
Here's the great part about it. He has to explain to his audience, which is obviously boomers, he has to explain at least 6 to 7 times within a 4 to 5 minute span that what he means by euthanasia is not the putting people to sleep like
killing them.
Right.
Which is what this program is doing.
But that it's a pun. But that it's a pun that he's using. I'm just like, if you have to explain this, you're talking to the wrong people.
Yeah. I mean, look, Adventists, you know, I saw a tract that's still being sold. The thing is like ancient, but it's still being sold by one Adventist ministry that says Big D on the front of it.
Oh no. Oh, no.
And it's a tract about divorce.
Oh,
for,
no.
For kids.
For
divorce for kids.
You know, to try to explain to them. They mean well, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. What are we going through in this family? But I just...
I just don't understand how your tract titled How to Deal with the Big D isn't reaching your audience in the way that...
Right.
So, can what
we
are you going to do?
Can we say that on this podcast? I don't know.
Wait, what is that? What, I don't get it. What does it
Sean,
mean?
Sean, just go away. Stop.
Anthony,
can you,
what are your thoughts?
Explain it to me?
Can I
don't have enough thoughts on this one. I already got in too much trouble with Esquire.
Listen, can I tell you guys one of my favorite technologies that Evan has used for a little bit of time that you probably never heard of?
I'm ready.
In the 1950s, especially among missionaries, a big thing was using black light. So they sold... all of these, I don't know, like markers and chalks and stuff that would only appear under black light. And so they would go buy like Masonite board for their evangelistic series. And I guess they would like write some things on it. They would paint it black, you know, for blackboard.
Oh.
And then they would write things on regular chalk. And then they flip on the black light. And then boom, they have other things written on there too.
Oh, wow.
And so nice. I got this, like somebody who saw it said, this is their quote, "It looks like 3D.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
So
I don't know exactly how they were using it, but I want to see it.
We can reenact Daniel 5 with that and do the writing on the wall, the many, many.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Right? So, I mean,
what
like,
a deep
on the wall.
Sean.
Right.
Yeah.
So we tried to find all these different ways of presenting it. What, you know, does it sound campy today? Like, definitely. Mm. Like, because that's what black light is today. But... you know, back then, I mean, not having ever seen something like this before, it was like, this is magic.
Well, I'm curious because obviously Adventism has maybe even more than many churches decided that using media was going to be a massive part of it. It's moving forward in the world. But what's interesting is, I don't know the full story of this, but I remember that, so Eric and I, we used to make a lot of videos when we were young and, like from the age of like, what were we, like 10 or 10, 11, 12 is when we started and stuff. So we've always been pretty interested in kind of what's happening in the media world. And it was around the time that Eric and I were making films that we had submitted to what's called Sunscreen, which is the Adventist film festival.
The Adventist Alliance.
Adventist film festival that exists. And so we were kind of involved in that world for 2 or 3 years. And there was this thing that came out called The Record Keeper. Some people might remember this. And it was sort of like, I think it was a GC or NAD like backed.
GC,
GC backed project that was going to be sort of a foray into the world of creative, you know, film production. Yeah. And so then it's made. And I mean... is it the best thing ever? No, but it's impressive in its own right for what it was.
Yep.
And it comes out and it gets shut down before it's released because there were a few things that were taken as creative license that made sense, but they weren't theologically perfect. And therefore it gets shut down. So I don't know, Eric,
not even the real reason it got shut down from what I've been told.
Really?
Oh,
Eric, say more.
Insider scoop.
Insider scoop with Eric. Whatever.
From conversations with people closely involved, I know that one of the big reasons that it got shut down was because the main actress had previously acted in a role in a lesbian film.
Okay.
Wow.
Interesting.
In her, you know, acting history. And all so right. that got discovered and then... that is obviously not dang. Okay. So we need to shut down this whole minute.
Well, so just to give some context, what it was the Record Keeper was a like a 10-part series. I don't remember how long the episodes were. They were not long.
I think they were 20.
That was like 10 minutes. But it was tend to be like a web series.
Web series that was a steampunk aesthetic on it, which was actually they did a pretty good job with that. Yeah. And then it was based on, was it The Great Controversy and sort of like The War in Heaven?
Yeah.
That's the sort of the basic idea, but steampunk aesthetic. So obviously there's going to be some creative liberties there. I don't know much about the actress and stuff like that, but that's even a whole thing. But like there's all of this stuff, and it was among Adventist creatives at the time, it just felt like oh yeah, like this is exactly right. what you would expect the GC to do, because they don't get what is happening yeah. here.
Yeah.
It was a really weird moment. Yes. And it actually, I think it shut down sort of the Adventist creative crew, like amongst our generation. Like, no, who was going to try and create yeah. stuff for the church after that?
It was disempowering for sure.
Yep. Yep. Well, they followed it up with Tell the World, right? And they're like, we're going to have greater control over this project and we're going to do it right. And the funny part is the woman.
Which, so just for context, Tell the World is like, it's the story of yeah, Adventism starting.
Yeah.
And it's a period piece. Like it's built, it's yeah. the whole thing is aesthetically, it's like in the 1800s yeah. and all that stuff. And it follows, I think, from William Miller through the Great Disappointment and sort of the beginnings yeah. of Adventism.
Yeah, it's our origin story where we get our superpowers from. And, well, anyways, my point is the actress who plays Ellen White in that also has been in these kinds of films. One of them, the year before, she started one called How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town.
Oh, wow.
What?
Really?
So I'm not really understanding the reaction to The Record Keeper, okay?
Interesting.
Ellen has history.
Wow.
Wow.
This is why Ellen White's not a prophet. I mean, did you guys know that Ellen White? Did you guys know that Ellen White was in a... No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
So I'm just saying, it's like, this is the problem, I think, with this level of the church. Is like, if you're going to go into this field of film, you're going to have to work with people who don't believe as you believe.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know, can you forgive their history? Jesus can. But, you know, I missed The Record Keeper tremendously. I remember when that was going on. It's still around on the internet somewhere, but you're right. It sent a chill.
I remember it leaked. I definitely watched the leaked version.
Yeah, they
released it at some point.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean,
there's definitely some parts of it where I'm like, I don't understand, you know, but overall it was like, I love this. If this is the future, I'm all for it.
Well, that was the thing. It was like the thing itself, the show itself. I just remember some parts I thought were pretty cool. Some parts I was like, yeah, it is what it is. But the whole idea of it was like, this is sort of it, the church is actually moving forward in a direction that a lot of young people, young creatives can get behind and say like, oh, like there's actually space for this in the church. That's really cool. And then it got shut down and everyone's like, oh yeah, obviously I'm going to take my skill and my talent elsewhere. I'm not going to, why would I invest in that for the church?
Right.
And then what was kind of interesting too was so I watched through Tell the World and it's actually like the period piece part of it is fairly well done. Like you don't really ever feel like you're pulled out of it being the 1800s and stuff. The acting is decent. I mean, it's not great. It's not terrible. Some parts of it are slightly preachy, but I don't really know how you get around that. But the part that got me the most was the part where is Hiram Edson, where it's after the Great Disappointment. You know, they've gotten everything wrong, and he's walking through a field with someone else, and all of a sudden he stops. It's like a cornfield, you know. He stops. Yeah. He's like, and then he pretty much just says, "I think you know we got the date right, but we got the content wrong or the event wrong." And that moment, I kid you not, was like, I've never felt more like part of a cult from that moment. It had the most like Mormon vibes I've ever experienced in my entire life. It was just like, oh, this is, yeah, I don't, I can't.
Speaking but of
it's the,
a different...
it's the delivery. It's the delivery.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't even so much the event. It was just like, this feels really, really weird.
We were right. It was this simple.
Yeah, but you know what? And then you saw Amazon's Rings of Power, and you're like, you know what? It's not so bad.
Oh, boy. Don't get me started on that, Matthew. Don't even...
See, here's the thing. Smart. Here's the thing. I thought Rings of Power was probably the best Lord of the Rings that has ever come
out.
Shut up.
Oh, that's you're not, a troll. You, that's you're not a troll. True.
You don't believe that.
I'm saying that specifically because Anthony and I have had consistently long conversations about this.
It's horrible.
Just like how I believe you, Star Wars is Disney taking over Star Wars.
Yeah.
Eric, what were you saying? Were you going to say something?
I was thinking, I thought Lord of the Rings of Power was great.
Oh, my word.
Listen to me. There's a difference between trolling a friend and just lying to him to his face,
yes.
destroying his soul.
Yes.
This is deep. But anyways, look, I mean, I think it's like, there's a variety of, on the Adventist landscape when it comes to media, right? So this Record Keeper is obviously a much more modern thing. You know, when it comes to Tell the World, the problem is being earnest on the internet. That's just a really hard thing. It's hard to sit through something that is 100% earnest without making fun of it, because that's what internet people do.
Yeah.
you know, you got to have some kind of like awareness that what I'm saying or doing is might seem ridiculous. You got to poke at yourself a little bit. But anyways, the point is what I love about the history of these Adventist media enterprises is that Adventism is entrepreneurial.
Hmm.
It wasn't that the church did buy that spot on the TV, but you know, you had to find an Adventist radio guy, Fagel, who was willing to step up and be like, "Hey, I'll take this. I have a vision for this. Like, let's do it." HMS Richards, man, like no one was holding his hand. He's just like, "I'm going to try this thing that very few people have done so far. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. See what happens. Like, why not?" And I think Adventism is still that way. If some things are campy or whatever, there are other things that are like that they're good. Like we have Adventist influencers and stuff today who are putting out some good content. We have sunscreen, as was mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. It's not overtly evangelistic, but there's some good quality content on there. So you'll just find everything, right? Because it's Adventism is a very entrepreneurial space.
Yeah. And there's, you know, and it's not just like we've been, Adventism is our church, so we can be critical of some of the growing pains of changing with the times, with culture and trying to hit a younger demographic. And that's always a challenge, but that's in Christianity too. So when we look at Christian movies, there's been a long time stigma quality issues.
Yeah.
So that's not just Adventism. But it wasn't always that way too. Like some of the greatest, you know, movies in the, you know, 20th century were Christian movies. You know, you talk about Ben-Hur, the Ten Commandments, and there was just a different, you know, vibe. And that kind of, I wasn't around to see it, but it feels like that may have been how Adventist media was perceived too, where it is written voice of prophecy. Like those were big deals during the 20th century. And so that kind of is interesting that not just in Adventism, but it seems like over the last 20, 30 years, there is this reputation that Christian media is subpar on basically every level, technologically, for actors, music, you know, you just go, you know, production value. It just feels like we're not on the same level. And, you know, we talk about doing things with excellence and we do this, you know, we're looking back on, you know, the Adventist landscape and like we've looked at, we were pushing the edge in so many ways.
Yeah.
And there are so many Adventist influencers now, but it still seems like there is that stigma to overcome. And, you know, even people are talking right now about the latest Christian movie, what is it? Jesus Revolution. That's one that's being talked about a lot. And some people are saying, you know, I haven't watched it, but I've seen a lot of reviews on it being, you know, actually well-produced and.
Yeah. And The Chosen and The Chosen.
Right.
Chosen,
and that's another one too, is Chosen that has really stood out. But it seems like those are outliers. And when it comes to, you know, YouTube, you have like the Bible Project and stuff. And I've always, you know, thought about how cool it would be for the Adventist Church to really produce and communicate our beliefs, you know, the Conflict of the Ages series in a way for the younger demographics to understand.
Yeah.
But those are the questions, you know, that we'll have to talk about later, but that's just kind of what we're looking at now is it's just interesting how it's changed. I don't know where it changed, where that stigma of Christian media is not as good. It's kind of the thing to joke about instead of like, oh, respect what they're doing. You may even disagree and not believe, but hey, you know, they're doing that well. They're producing stuff that's fascinating that I want to learn about their church. I don't know where that exactly changed, but it seems like Jesse had mentioned last 15, 20 years, maybe 30 years, that something kind of flipped there in what seems like all of Christianity.
Yeah. I mean, it's a language, right? We're learning to speak a different language. And the problem is like this visual language changes constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like what was acceptable 10 years ago, man, you watch some films now, like secular films or whatever, not that I do, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And you're like, how long are they going to stay in this shot before they cut to something else? Like, why do I got to watch them take 12 steps, you know, like down the hall? Like, gosh, just make a cut already, you know? Go to the next shot, please.
It's always great when like you're surprised how dated it was because at the time you were like you watched like Spider-Man 1, like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 1. Not that I ever have, but if you were hypothetically were to.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I definitely have. And you're just like, wow, this is dated.
Yeah.
This is so dated.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like Ace Ventura or whatever, where spoiler alert, like we have like the transgender plot twist and you're like, yeah, I don't think they would joke about that today.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's not...
Right.
That's not That's not, you know, but my point is like, it's not just Christians who are wrestling with this. I think the difference is that the extra challenge that Christians have is that we're trying to translate this like body of ideas into this ever evolving visual language or audio language in the case of radio and stuff, podcasting. Like we're trying to explain how this thing we conceptualized in 1800 and something, right, or the year 31 or whatever, like we're trying to kind of translate this into, whereas, you know, in the secular world, they do some of that when they make like the seventh remake of Little Mermaid or whatever. but most of the time they can just start from scratch. They can, they don't, but they can. Everything right. is a remake.
Everything's
a
remake now.
Yeah. But I mean, they can, right? They can just start, oh, what if instead of, you know, whatever, some like they're going to take Romeo and Juliet, like let's put them in a modern city and let's give them guns instead of swords. And,
right,
you know, like they can translate that. We don't do that so well with Jesus. You know, mm-hmm. so like Jesus Christ Superstar is kind of like modern music in the past, or, mm-hmm. you know, how do you like reset these ideas and themes in a way that doesn't, that you don't lose something critical when you yeah. do it?
And I mean, the challenge seems to be like people are very attached to their cultural conception, right? They're are very attached to their,
yeah.
Yeah. The way that they were growing up, their culture conceptualized of it. So then to try and shift and then communicate it in a new way is almost, it's almost like you don't even, it's like learning a new language and then trying to speak in that language.
Yeah.
That's not native to you.
Yeah. And then hoping it ages well.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the challenge. Like look, there's definitely some things we can say about the Adventist Media Ministries, especially the visual ones that need to be said, but like, how much better would I do in that situation with those donors, with that audience, mm-hmm. with that corporate structure in history? You know, is it as simple as just plugging somebody new in at the top? Probably not. But I do think I know we're not supposed to be talking about present day stuff as much, but I do think we're witnessing the beginning of the next Adventist media
renaissance.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we're going to get big things like It Is Written. Maybe we'll just get like a bunch of small people. We can all think of some names, mm-hmm. you know, who are doing this thing, and maybe they'll form like a collaboration together or something. And, you know, we kind of have some semblance of the next organization that is reaching people, and then they're going to get old and boring and we'll find somebody yeah. else. You know,
we can create a Adventist podcast cinematic universe where we all come together and make something.
Yes. And then all the movies just end up being the same, right? Like yeah. that's just, everything gets stale. So, you know, complaining that Christian stuff is stale, like every, you know, very few things I think end up getting to become classics.
Yeah. It's
like,
well, that's,
like
that's
Lord
even,
of the Rings.
Amen.
That's even getting into like business insight, you know, when a business to stay relevant, like if it's a media business, like they have to know how to be flexible, you know, every 5 to 10 years to stay up with technology, with culture, you know, whether they're producing film or TV shows, if it's a network or, you know, you have to know how to keep changing as, you know, continually to stay on the top of your game.
Right.
And so how do we, maybe that's too long of a discussion, even just looking at how to create that type of
business
model.
But it's super easy, but the problem is we don't want to do it because the way that like secular media and stuff can figure this stuff out is by, they have like, they're just ruthless with the metrics. So if we want to start talking baptisms as the measure of everything we do, we definitely could have, it'd be easier to change because you're like, baptisms are down 13%. We need to adjust our content. But the problem is we don't want our ministries to be thinking that way, you know, and becoming mercenary.
Yeah.
It's all about the baptism. It's all about the baptism. So we've kind of made it so it's like, well, don't judge by metrics, you know. So then what do? We like judge based on donations? Like donations are up, we must be doing good.
Right.
I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I guess you could do like viewers, but just as more people get on the internet, you're going to have more viewers. Yeah. So, you know, we've kind of made it really hard to think about this from a business side, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think part of the problem too, this may be delving into modern day, but it's hard to run a quote unquote media corporation when it's headed up by a pastor or someone without a media background.
What are you trying to say? Look,
saying
you're
you guys
ordained,
are one trick ponies,
you can do anything.
And you're only good at one.
Not even good at that one thing. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. That is a problem to some of our stuff, including publishing, is that we don't really have a business sense.
Yeah. It's again, like we all can acknowledge, it's very easy to point out faults. It's much easier to do that than it is to actually fix those or do something better.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm hopeful, like you said, Matthew. I feel like the future is probably more independent ministries. And I say that meaning like ultra independent, not like Amazing Facts or like Voice of Prophecy. Because the reality is, it is vastly cheaper and more attainable to create quality content
than it
has ever been.
Yep.
And so I don't know. I guess I probably see the future being just YouTubers or churches with a passion for creating something.
Yeah.
Actually having that freedom that comes from not having the oversight of the GC or donors.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not so libertarian in the future, because really the GC is, or the NAD or whatever, is kind of a, like, I don't want to say angel investors. It's like Shark Tank.
Hmm.
If you have an idea, Eric, and let's say it's starting to grab a lot of traction, the church will platform you in the sense that your story is going to end up in the Review. It's going to end up on Avenue's News Network or whatever. And then if you're willing, a lot of times they'll fund you for a stake in what it is that you're doing, like for a voice in what it is that you're doing, right?
Right.
I mean, this is what we've always done. Like, Voice of Prophecy did their thing. They're just on a few radio stations in the beginning. The church comes in and says, let's put you on more radio stations. What do you think? And give us a seat at the table. Obviously, we talked about that with Faith for Today. Like, the church is the one who bought the 13 half-hour episodes with ABC and then said, now let's find a creator, so to speak, to host this thing. So, I mean, I think we like looking at it sometimes backwards, where it's like, well, what is the church doing? And I think the question is like, what are we doing that the church is willing to support? Now, that should have been Record Keeper, right? Like, that should have been how it works. But I don't think that model is broken. It just didn't work out, unfortunately, in that situation. I think they're still looking for people to boost, looking for people to hold up, being like, see, this is us. We're proud of what this person has done. You know?
I'm admittedly, I tend to be cynical, Matt.
No. I have not noticed that from anybody on this podcast.
it's not even present. No, yeah, I think Record Keeper is a good example of why. It's like, and I mean, this comes from a general principle that I think I've learned just from pastoring over time and stuff, interacting with folk, is like, younger people tend to, in my experience, value the liturgies, expressions, and media formats of older people more than older people value the liturgies, media expressions of younger people.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to like religious spaces, because people have theology attached to stuff. People have, spiritual significance attached to stuff. You know, the whole don't go to movie theaters, your angel leaves, you know, that kind of stuff is like, it's still deeply ingrained in people. So how is it, like, over time, the church seems to have like a record of, and when I say a record, I mean the one that we've described, Record Keeper.
You're keeping a record. I can tell.
Yes.
Okay.
Keeping a record. But yeah, I guess that, you know, not to be overly cynical, but how do we push past this sort of feeling like, oh man, it seems like whenever, you know, we try things new liturgies, new expressions of media, there's not a valuing from an older perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's normal. I have two small daughters. Mm-hmm. I'm showing them movies. I mean, theoretically, like hypothetically.
Right, yeah.
Showing them movies. That I like. Like things that when I was a kid, like, so Ninja Turtles is coming out again for the 15th time.
Nice. Right.
You know, so I have to tell them about how I watched Ninja Turtles when I got home from school back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's only natural that when they grow up, they're going to have more of an understanding of my world than I'm going to have of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm discipling them every single day into my world. And so it's just, it's easier to kind of like look up than it is to look down. I don't mean that in like someone's better than anybody. I'm just saying like, that's just human nature. It's so much, you know, I look at history, like it's so much easier to understand history than it is to understand the emerging generations that are coming up right now.
Right. That's true.
You know, so, I mean, I think that there's...
You're saying it's human nature is what you're saying.
It's human nature. It's human nature. And it takes, like, the culture has to go along with it. Like, all of us are going to come to a point in our lives where we're going to struggle to get on board with something somebody is doing in the younger generations because we just don't understand it. We don't see the point of it. You know, whatever it may be, it's going to happen at some point.
Oh, that's my life every day, Matthew.
I've felt that.
Like, teaching junior high, that's...
There you go.
It's even in the 8 years that I've taught, like things have changed a lot. Like junior high is an interesting time because they're always on the latest fad.
Yeah.
You know, whatever social media trend or whatever is going on. And so I see like front and center, like how quickly something comes in and out when it comes to culture, just the way that they speak, the things that they're watching, the things that they're interested in. The way that they write or can't write.
That's what ChatGPT is for.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. Oh, man.
My sermons have improved.
Yeah. No,
that's real. I remember the first time I felt like, oh, I don't know this one. Like, and when I was a youth pastor and I'm like, I was on it. Like, I was like in the culture. And then there was a moment where someone sent me something and I was just like, I don't know this.
Yeah,
I had to look it up.
Yeah, back to Urban Dictionary.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But it's like, so wait, my point is like, it's not surprising that the GC kind of choked a little bit on the record keeper. Hmm. Maybe the GC wasn't the right place for that project to be funded. In hindsight, like maybe we need some kind of different church structure for maybe like today. Maybe the Adventist Learning Community would have funded it. You know, and it'd be an NAD thing, I think. The GC, it's hard because, you know, we're like 5% in North America of the World Church membership.
Yeah.
And so you're going to publish something that is going to confuse the world church, you know, much of the world church.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to understand, like, this is against Ellen White. You know, like, this isn't how she described these things. And they're going to write angry letters to the GC. So they're looking at that like, is it easier to write off $1 million or is it easier to get that mail constantly and lose the confidence of the brethren around the world?
Hmm.
You know, it was not the right place for that to start. But my point is that we shouldn't be surprised if there's some cultural differences there because it takes a while to get on board. It took a while for the NAD to get on board with things. But now, more or less, like they're like, OK, we're going to champion these influencers and stuff today. Like they may not be like with it themselves, but the leaders at the NAD understand its importance and the importance of being on social media and doing short form video and all in podcasting and all these things. Like they get it now. The GC, you know, they'll get it in another generation. But the point is like, yeah, it takes a little while to sink in. We just got to find a better way of fostering creative endeavors from the beginning. So it doesn't have to rely on people 100 floors up in the building getting on board with it.
Which is maybe as we begin to wrap up, like where I hear you saying, like talking about hope for the future and just like the shifting atmosphere, it's really like the whole paradigm that's already shifted with media, it seems, where like people less and less go to some centralized tower to get their information and more go to independent, smaller content creators, et cetera.
Yeah.
True.
We need a strategy meeting here, I think, because it made sense in the days of the review when like this is the one thing you're reading. And then it's like, okay, well, let's add the youth's instructor so we can have something for younger people. Okay, great. And then like you slowly start to branch out, but the review was the bulletin board for the entire denomination. If you needed the job, you put it in there. If you were offering a job, you put it in there. If you had livestock for sale, you know, you put a little notice in there. Or your travel arrange, you know, like, oh, Ellen White's going to be in these five cities over these dates, you know, be there if you want to be there. Like, it was the only way to find out what was going on in the Adventist world. Today, obviously, it's not the case. And it's hard because I met a couple months ago, I met somebody who was leading one of these major media ministries and they had a booth and they're like, yeah, here's a pin and here's some things we have going on. The Lord has really blessed us. And I just remember thinking, good for you. Like, I don't watch it.
Right.
You know, like this, like what are you offering
for me
that I can't get somewhere else? Hmm. You know, that's equal or better.
Yeah. So we need like a Avenus social media platform, like a central hub for everything.
No, no.
You're talking about something. Wait, you're talking about the internet. You just described
but
the
like
internet.
a concentrated place to
yes.
have collaborations and bounce off ideas. Mm. And,
oh yeah.
What if the church bought MySpace?
Wow.
It just got that back up and running here. I want to see some sparkles and some music play when I go to your page, Sean.
Oh man, I miss MySpace.
Some yeah. Green Day
top,
comes
top
on.
Top three friends.
Yeah.
Good times.
So, that's right. Top three friends, and Tom is one of them.
Sean, you were in Tom. My top four. I remember that.
Oh man. That was high school. High school was MySpace was weird. Okay, we've gotten way off.
Hey, that's media.
I actually wanted to say before I never found the right time to say it, maybe at the beginning, but like the Adventist Church is turning 160 in May, I think.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
May 21. So it's amazing, like in that time, so we're talking, of course, about media, like just how much has changed and like this church has changed so much. Like when you look at what started and what worked back in 1929 when Voice of Prophecy started, and then even in the 50s, like it was such a, like it was just a couple million people at the time. Now we're at over 20 million. So, you know, there's so many conversations to have about how to connect, how to communicate, what that looks like. There's so many different cultures, different generations. And so, yeah, there's a lot there. I think the reason maybe we're a little critical, Matthew, is we've looked at the numbers of, and I don't know, I don't have them pulled up in front of me, but isn't the Adventist Church one of the older denominations just by, I don't know if it's median age or like when you look in
I was like older. We're talking about 160 years old.
The average age of a person that is a member in the church. And so part of that is what you mentioned, like we skew our media towards, you know, those people, but then you say, well, if you want to get younger, you know, you have to rethink how we're doing things.
Yeah. We're actually not super old. I mean, in the world, I think it's a different story,
right?
Yeah. But Pew Research did a little study of this in America, and we're actually below, I don't know how this is possible in their study, but like we're below the average American age.
Interesting.
Like just slightly.
Oh, really?
Which is,
okay. Yeah.
Which is what? Do we know?
Which is, well, I don't, 48 or okay. That's what they say at least. 46, something like that. I don't know. Again, the problem with Pew and all these research things when they do Adventists is like when they're doing all these denominations, like the Adventist slice is like interviewed 18 people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Sample size, you know? 4.
Yeah. 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 Because they got to get a bunch of Catholics and a bunch of others. So it's really hard to take all this. I mean, I know here in Illinois, we're about 10 years older than the average Illinoisan.
Mm. Yeah.
So, that's a challenge too, right? Mm-hmm. But, again, I believe in Adventist pragmatism. I think that we're a people who will figure stuff out. And even though we have these ideals, whatever, there's the grumpiness about Faith for Today and drama. They got over it. And it got so popular that we can now ignore Faith for Today for the most part. Although, I think that their new leadership is great. Like, I like them a lot, but with Roy Ice. But anyways, my point is I don't know. I think we tend to, if we can avoid suffocating the things that we attempt to do with qualms and fears, then I think the pragmatism will win out. And we'll just be like, well, does it work? Yes, it does. Let's go then.
Which, and that pragmatism, like, that speaks to me because beneath, or I guess the core of that pragmatism is, like, we just want people to know, like, about Jesus. It comes from the evangelistic heart, right? It comes from, that's my assumption.
Yeah.
It comes from that.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe part of the problem is traditionally Adventist media is not about, we want people to know Jesus. It's we want people to know our
about Adventism.
Adventist beliefs in the Three Angels message, and
that's very
which
true.
Is okay.
It's okay.
It's not.
You're saying it's different.
It's not
that's
fundamentally bad, but I think we get caught up in that in Adventist media.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's all about prophecy. It's all about Jesus. Yeah. It's all about the end times. It's all about.
And I think part of that is
Sabbath. It's like We get lost in the weeds.
It's the distinctives.
It's not even a ministry anymore. We're just trying to convert other denominations to Adventism. We're not trying to.
I like us to take a more subtle approach, and I'm not going to. So let's get off the criticism. I'll just say, like, what I'd like to see in Adventism is we can still hold on to those identifying parts of Adventism, but find a way to connect with the culture of our time in a way that's meaningful. So when they hear about the Bible, you know, one of the, I'll just mention them one more time, the Bible Project, when they go into all the books of the Bible or themes,
we're fanboys.
I'll read through so many comments of people that say, I don't actually believe, you know, this stuff, but the way that it connects, like the way you've woven a story and the visuals and the audio, like everything together, it's very compelling to me. It's not, you know, they're not trying to like sell you something.
Yeah.
They're not trying to convert you, but as a byproduct, people are engaged with the topic of the Bible. And so in the same way, can we take, you know, on top of that message of Jesus, of course, the depth of our theology, our doctrine, that I believe enriches it, it adds to who Jesus is, it adds to the character of God and the plan of salvation, all those things that the Bible speaks about. How do we do that in a meaningful way as a byproduct? So it's compelling. Yeah. And so anyways, I know that that's maybe in some ways where we can leave it off for people to think about. If that's our goal, we need to think about and discuss, especially those that do create content or those that want to do that in the future. How can we do that in a meaningful way and create space for that? So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think sitting down, figuring out what we want to say, and then we think, figure out what is the best medium to say what we want to say to people. You know, and just kind of strategize it out right now, because if, you know, and then figuring out like, how is this media going to affect the message that I'm trying to give? You know, I see some people out there like trying to explain Adventism on Instagram or whatever, or YouTube shorts, which are like the worst because it's what is it, like a minute
it's
or something?
It's super short.
Short.
Yeah.
And so it's like, but they're just trying to like throw it out there. And I'm like, this is actually a really poor explanation because how can you do this in 1 minute? And other people are able to like utilize that time format really, really well and effectively. But I think, you know, in some way, like the multitude of avenues that we can take is itself a problem. It's an opportunity and a problem because do we do when it was like, oh, radio's new. Well, let's jump on radio.
Right.
And it was basically just sermons at first because people are used to sermons in churches. So it wasn't really a big deal. And, you know, one of the things they figured out about maybe 10 months into after the first Christian broadcast on radio is, hey, I'm not just trying to reach Christians out there in America. People are writing me letters and I'm actually forming a community around this technology. So they started whatever it was called, the Radio Church of America. And so they started treating it like, you gathering around the radio for this broadcast is church for some people who will never go to a physical church, which is exactly what we're going through with media today, right? It's like we're forming these digital churches and we think, wow, like we're really innovating. It's like, no, man, radio did this literally 100 years ago. They were struggling with how do we keep in contact with the people in our, you know, and of course, James Dobson builds his thing out of that, right? And they're like, we're forming communities around this technology, around this medium. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, it's really nothing new. We always like to think that we're doing something new, but it's not really new. It's just a different, I guess, landscape now. There's just so many different formats you can take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've covered pretty well. I think hopefully we covered pretty well.
Good. Super good.
The first part of this topic, we do want to get into, you know, some of the future a bit more, but, Matthew, thank you for joining us. You obviously are one of the people at the forefront, and you wouldn't say it, but we would, that you've created and we're a bit of a trailblazer in podcasting for Adventism. Still are. You've created not only just one with the Adventist History Podcast, but now your brand itself is the Adventist History Project, correct? Mm-hmm. That's the branding. Yep. And so you have four podcasts under that branding. And, you know, how have... And I'll just maybe let you have the final word on this. Do you feel like that has given you a different perspective on the purpose of media, the way to deliver, you know, when it comes to ministry, when it comes to your purpose? I know that you describe every time I've listened, you describe your goal as creating Adventists that have a working.
Yeah.
What's the tagline? A working.
Yeah, a working knowledge of Adventist history.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's what we want to give people. Like, not all the dates and names and places, but just like information that you can use as you figure out how to live Adventistically today.
Hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. You know, like, how do I think and act in that with that history in mind? You know, I think podcasting has opened my eyes. I really appreciate it because I can talk for 30, 40, 50 minutes. I did one episode that was 3 hours.
Mm. Yeah.
And I love that. The visual media is not so forgiving unless it's like super well produced. I mean, you really
like Joe Rogan or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Joe. Yeah. But, or, I mean, like you look at like the Snyder cut and it's like half of it is all slow motion and you're like, no.
Right. That's so true.
And I'm not trying to watch a slow motion movie. You know, but anyways, I think that there's way, like people are looking for ways to connect with other people.
Hmm.
And the problem is like, they don't know it. You just can't survey people. I'm a big fan of Steve Jobs on this when he's like, I'm not going to do customer surveys because they don't know what they want.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And that's really arrogant because it's Steve Jobs, but
classic Steve.
You know, it is. But I mean, he wasn't wrong. Because if you would have asked people in the 90s to be like, draw
an
a
iPhone?
Picture of a, yeah, like draw, what technology do you want next? They'd be like, well, I just want this, but a little bit different. I mean, that's basically what they would come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like my favorite thing about the podcast is like when people come up to me and they're like, I thought it would suck, but it didn't.
Mm. What a compliment.
It is. And I've heard it so many times. I'm like, well, thanks. Because they, you know, we're used to Adventists doing not always the best kind of content. And
very true.
So whatever platform you choose, understand that like people aren't necessarily sure that they want it yet until you do it. And if you're going to do it well, just do it well. Like you
and
guys.
I know that. Oh, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. You'll say differently when you're off, but that's okay.
We're holding Matt's family hostage so that he said that.
We need like a trade industry of Adventist podcasters and give out like awards every year and stuff.
We should.
We need like an Adventist Oscars.
Let's do it.
Adventist Oscars.
We'll call it the Ellens.
The Ellens.
Yeah.
You get a little golden effigy of Ellen's head.
No. It's going to be the Daniel 2 statue.
Oh, yeah, nice.
There you go. Exactly.
Daniel 2 statue with Ellen's head.
But it's all gold. That's right. All gold.
It's all gold.
So it's the buff body and then the Ellen White head on top.
Just to make the idolatry worse, it's all gold.
Does anybody want have a 3D printer that we could borrow?
Yes. That's amazing.
I'm on it.
Yeah. Well, Matthew, thank you for joining us. Yep. And I know that you're continuing to build the Adventist History Project. And I know that you've even looked beyond podcasting at different ideas. So it's cool to see the future of that and your project. And so we're thankful that you've joined us today and discussed this with us. So yeah. Anything else that where can people find you? Where do you want people to find you?
Oh man, they can go to AdventistHistoryPodcast.org or on Facebook and Instagram, YouTube, whatever. We actually started putting up video episodes of some of the episodes now.
I noticed
that. Not my stuff. Cause nobody wants to see me like reading for an hour. But you know, like the conversations that we have, we were responding to Cultish on Adventist Pilgrimage. And so we did a video episode of that. It was fun. I took inspiration from you guys.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Cool.
And then what's your home address?
So people can find you there.
Yeah. I'm going to just give you the GC address.
Awesome. Man.
Thanks, Matthew.
We appreciate you, man.
All right. Yep. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, thank you so much for once again listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought. And we hope, most of all, that the conversations have been beneficial to you and life-giving in some way. Thank you so much to our patrons. We really, really appreciate each and every single one of you for sacrificing monetarily to support us in making this podcast happen. So from our hearts to you, we just want to say a deep thank you. We are feeling much gratitude. All right, I think that is about it. If you want to stay connected with us, you can easily do that on any of our social media platforms. There's a link in our Instagram. That's kind of where we direct people. But if you're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, we're there, and you can find us there. Just type in our name and it'll take you right to us. So thank you so much for listening, for supporting, and we'll see you next time on Seeking What They Sought.